Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin, and this is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU. Appreciate Stockton helping us out back in studio. I'm actually on location up in, I'm in Taylorsville right at the moment, but be heading over to the state baseball tournament here and just as soon as the show's over here, I'll be heading over there. And I appreciate you tuning in. With me today in studio, back here in the studio, is Jack Hunter, Colonel Jack Hunter, well, retired Colonel Jack Hunter. How you doing, Jack?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for coming in today. You guys have a special event coming up. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes, but maybe just right up front, let everybody know what's happening first before we get into some other stuff. But what is this big event?
Well, you know, Armed Forces Day celebration that we have every year for the Armed Forces. And we have, you know, our airplanes are on display and everything. This year we don't have the B-17 or B-25. They went south this year, but hopefully next year we'll have them back. Anyway, we got a whole bunch of airplanes out there this year. We've got, I could name off a whole bunch of them, but anyway, and of course our big C-54, you know, our four-engine airplane. It's a beautiful airplane. We got it all converted inside to a museum, and we get to tour into that big airplane. So all kinds of fun activities, and of course on Saturday night we have our big 1940s dance.
Yeah, I was able to. I'm not going to be able to be there this year, Jack, because I'm here at the state tournament. But I was able to go to it a few years ago. Just a fun night for all, a night of celebration for our armed forces. And I love the feel of, you know, kind of 1940s feel. And just a fun time to be had by all. And you don't have to be a dancer. I'm not much of a dancer, Jack. I don't know if you dance or not, but I'm not.
It's really a lot of fun. You know, we have that wonderful orchestra from here, you know, that 18-piece, you know, Glenn Miller's style orchestra. They're a phenomenal band. I mean, they're wonderful. And then this year, of course, we can talk about a little bit. We have the Polynesian people doing the floor show this year. And Kaipo and Kathy Bridges are heading that up, the Hawaiian people. And, you know, so it's going to be a wonderful dance. So besides the show out there, we do have that dance coming up.
All right, let's talk about the Western Air Museum, Warbird Museum, a little bit, and we'll also want to talk a little bit, Jack, about your history. Now, when I call you Colonel, it's not like I'm making stuff up or it's a nickname. You actually were a Colonel in the Air Force, correct?
Yes, sir. I was. I spent 33 years in the Air Force.
Wow. Wow. How did you? I'm always curious what leads people to their life decisions to get them to where they end up. But how did you end up? I know you're a pilot as well. How did you end up picking that particular area?
Well, you know, when I was I grew up in Wyoming and a little town of Kemmer, Wyoming, J.C. Penney's first store. Yeah. My neighbor was a Civil Air Patrol pilot, and they had a little J-3 Cub, and he'd take me up to the airport there early in the morning. We'd go out and fly that thing when I was just a youngster, and I just, you know, I got the fever. I really wanted to fly airplanes, and so I got to where I graduated from high school. Then I decided where I was going to go to college. I went to Utah State University, and of course the Wyoming people didn't like that too well. I didn't go to the University of Wyoming, but they didn't have an aviation program. And so I went to Utah State and went through the ROTC. Then, and of course, Vietnam was on, and then I spent my time in active duty, and then got out, went into reserves, and I started Vietnam, and I quit at Desert Storm.
Wow, incredible! Did you fly combat missions, or were you kind of in between times?
It was no, I didn't get over in Vietnam in combat. Been there, but I have never flown over there.
Okay. You mentioned the fever. I know. I actually have a nephew of mine who is a pilot, and just. It was the same kind of thing for him. Once he got up there and got a taste of what it's like to pilot an airplane, he almost became obsessed with it. Was that how it was for you when you were young? You're like, something I want to do the rest of my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess you really don't know why, because, you know, you have all kinds of things that you can go into. But I just wanted to fly airplanes because of my neighbor. you know, spend the time taking me up flying in that old J3 Cub. And it just was, just exciting to do. And I said, that's what I want to do for my life, is I want to be a pilot. So off I went.
Years ago, when Dixie was a junior college, we ended up signing a one-year contract with a guy who was a pilot. He ran an outfit called Western Air. It was basically like a six or eight seat airplane, and he would actually transport us to games. Now, Dixie back then didn't play. They didn't play. You know, they weren't playing in New York or Texas. They were just playing teams like in Idaho, Arizona, Montana, you know, in the West. And so he was able to fly us to a few games, and mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. But I remember one time, we're middle of the night, we're flying, and everybody else had fallen asleep. And so I'm just sitting there talking with the pilot, and I said, "Hey, have you ever had to ditch?" And I'm sure that's probably a question that you've had before, Jack, where you've actually had to land without an engine or ditch out or whatever. His answer was, "Well, not really." He said, "I've had to land without an engine a couple of times for various reasons, but you know, he was able to land in an airport, except for one time he did land in a field. Unfortunately, it was a very flat field, and everything was fine."
But right.
How about you?
Well, a strange thing. I've flown 20-some thousand hours of flying, but I've never had an engine failure. But
really?
I did have, but on my first solo flight out of Sun Valley, Idaho, which I had an aviation operation up there, learning to fly gliders. And going north out of the airport there at Sun Valley, when you get off the end of the runway, all there's there is a road. And, of course, distributor thing and the big home and everything. And as soon as I got airborne, got off the end of the runway, my rope broke. So I didn't have much choice.
You were airborne slightly at that point?
Oh, yeah, we were airborne. We were airborne, and I wasn't high enough that I could clear any of those houses. So I remember there was a cemetery off to the right. And so I just pedaled a little bit off to the right, and I went over the cemetery, got a little bit of lift off the headstones, and there was an empty field they just had mowed, and so I put that thing down in the empty field. And so that's the only engine failure I've had. There wasn't, so it was just a glider. But I've been lucky. I've flown lots and lots and lots of airplanes, and especially Lifelight. I flew Lifelight for 11 years out of Salt Lake and flying the jets and then the turboprops and everything. I've never, some of my people, you know, compadres have had engine failures. I've never had an engine failure. Knock on wood. Thank heavens.
Yeah. I don't want to jinx you.
No.
It's Andy's fault.
That's it.
So you flew Life Flight. What was that like? I mean, people think Life Flight, they think helicopters, of course. But,
sure.
You know, I had, when my niece had a traumatic brain injury, they flew her by jet from St. George to, well, I think it was from Cedar City, actually, to Salt Lake.
Sure.
Life Flight isn't just helicopters, is it?
Oh, no. We had, that time when I was flying, we had what the Mitsubishi MU-2s, the Rice rockets, the big turboprop airplanes and stuff. And in that time, Life Flight the University of Utah Hospital also had their flight, medical flights. But we flew most of the West, you know. Unlike today, they've got a lot of operators now, but then we were it. And it was a great one. I really enjoyed it, except it was, I'm 50 years older because of flying Life Flight. Because people don't have accidents and don't have babies during the day or good weather.
Right.
It's always
in the middle of night.
It's always middle of night with horrible weather going into Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho or Nevada, you know. In those days, we didn't have the wonderful stuff they got in airplanes today. You know, they got the moving maps and the big TV screens and all that stuff. We had an INS that, is a Loran that didn't even work half the time. And so you're doing approaches down through mountains there that you wouldn't do, normally. And not most of my flights, I would say about 60% of my flights were children. And it was a saying, if you knew it was a child, you always flew. And of course, I think the times that we did risk our lives, but luckily, I didn't have any accidents and stuff, but there's times I really was, luckily I had a man sitting in the right seat from upstairs that watched over me, because if not, I certainly wouldn't have been here.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm guessing, and you addressed it a little bit, there's an extra added amount of stress, too, because a life hangs in the balance. Mm-hmm. You've got to get there. There's you know, it's like the mailman, rain, sleet, shine, whatever. You got to get there.
You got to get there. You do. Well, you know, and the hospital always told us, you know, don't risk the doctors or the flight nurses' lives either, or yours. You know, do the best you can do, be careful. But children, we always went, and, you know, if we couldn't get in, then we'd come home. But we always tried to, you know, for a child. And it, sometimes, let's say, you do things you shouldn't be doing because it's a child.
Mm, wow. What years were you flying Lifelight?
Let's see if I can remember. From 90 to 2003 when I moved down here.
Okay. There's actually, did you fly, like, if there was a Lifelight needed from, say, Cedar to Salt Lake? Because that's when my niece passed away, but that's when she got in her bike wreck.
And
she was Lifelighted from Cedar to Salt Lake.
Well, it could have been.
Might have been you.
Because,
wow.
You know, I did start the Lifelight here, the fixed-wing Lifelight down here in St. George.
Wow,
and,
incredible.
Because I was a lead pilot up there, and we started it down here for the hospital here, and we had some, training the people and stuff down here on, you know, the Lifelight. And so we spent some time down getting this started here.
Well, I know we've told the story before, but it's been a couple of years, so I thought it might be appropriate, Jack, to tell the story of your museum there, the Western, well, I always say it in the wrong order, so I'll let you say it, but your museum.
Western Sky Aviation Warbird Museum? Yeah, it's a big mouthful.
That's the one, yeah, there's all those words in there, and I usually leave one out. So tell us a little bit about how it came to be, because I think it's a fascinating story.
Well, it's I came down here to work for SkyWest Airlines, you know, flight safety manager and stuff, the airlines, and being loving airplanes and everything, I had a good friend over in Modesto, California, call me one day and say, Jack, I've got an airplane I'd like to give you. And I says, what do you got? And he says, well, I got that MiG-15. I says, yeah, sure. No, I do, but I want to give it to you because I want somebody to take care of it because I'm dying of cancer, and I want somebody to have this airplane. So
wow.
I went down there, and we got the airplane and brought it up here to the old airport, of course.
So what's the approximate value of a MiG like that?
Well, this is a little bit special kind of a MiG because it's a Russian-designed, Chinese-built MiG-15. And
Is that the red one?
It's the red one. And it's got their original guns on it, and it's got bullet holes in it. So you know, my neighbor was an F-86 pilot, and I asked him, Reed, did you shoot at my airplane? He said, probably. So anyway, we had the bullet holes. So anyway, we started up the airport up here, and some fool one day says, well, why don't you start a museum so everybody can see this airplane? Because there's not any of these airplanes around. I says, well, that's a good idea. Get a 501c3 and let's see how what happens. And like I say, we're at the old airport, and I had bought a hangar up there. And so we started it. And so from then on, you know, we started getting aircraft donations and stuff for tax purposes. And that kind of snowballed. I mean, it just went crazy. And of course, we had the opportunity to move to the new airport. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so it's been a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, but a lot of fun. But I one of the reasons that I kind of got into the museum, too, is for students, for young. We have a lot of students come out, which we're grateful for the schools that let them come out to the airport. And we not only teach them about the airplanes, and the airplanes are important, but it's the people that flew those airplanes that are more important. You know, when we had the B-17 here, I was flying on the B-17, I just thought these were 19 and 20-year-old kids flying these airplanes in Europe.
Yeah.
Never known they were going to come home. Never. And most of them didn't. So we owe gratitude to those people. So that's why we have the museum and try to teach young people, you know, it's not only the airplanes, but it's the pilots that flew those airplanes and the ground crews, the maintenance people and support people. That's what your freedom today to do and go to school and do what you do here. And so that's how, kind of how we started, and it's been a labor of love, of course. I mean, it's like anything in aviation. You got to have millions of dollars to make a dollar, but I started with a dollar, still there.
We don't
charge because I want young kids to come, I want people to come and everything and to enjoy it without worrying about having to pay a mission fee. And we do here for this event here because we have our volunteers and we feed them and everything like that. We make $5 is not a lot of money, but you know it just helps us out a little bit. And so this is, but the dances are a fundraiser, And then we have a big fly-in in October when we have the fighter jets come and fly with us. So that keeps us going during the year. So that's how pretty much we get going.
Flying Fortress, the bombers with with the tail gunners and stuff. I brought my dad in a couple years ago, and we were just imagining what kind of, guts, chutzpah it would take for a guy to, I'm a tail gunner in a bomber. It's a little teeny compartment, whatever comes to shoot you is shooting for you because you're the stinger. On the Hornet,
it is small.
Unbelievable.
Claustrophobic.
Unbelievable.
And then the ball turret gunner underneath the airplane. My heavens.
Yeah.
That took special people to do those kind of things. So, it's interesting to see those people and stuff like that. And we also, this last year, we had probably once in a lifetime, we had the B-29 doc in here. And he called me one day and said, would you like to have our B-29? Oh, sure. Yeah, I thought they were kidding me. There's only one in the world flying at that time, and they came in here. And they also brought another very special airplane with them, the C-47, that's all brother. That flew the first lead aircraft in Normandy invasion. Can you imagine? Wow. That airplane is still flying.
Yeah. And the crazy thing, Jack, is that was, 45, that was 80, almost 80 years ago, 79 years ago.
Oh, easy. Yeah. And that plane is beautiful. We got to go on flying it there. It's just a gorgeous airplane. But it preserved that thing. And of course, our C-54 is a 1942 airplane, flew in the Berlin airlift. And it's kind of a famous airplane because, the candy bomber.
Colonel
Gail Halvorsen's, that's one of the C-54s he flew. They flew, all flew over there in the Berlin airlifts. And so, we got some pretty nice airplanes. They're old, but people don't think they're old because they're pretty well-preserved airplanes.
I was going to ask you about that part of it. These airplanes, restore them and to maintain them is super expensive. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have some benefactors, some people that are saying, I want to help you maintain this? Because it seems like you can't do it by yourself, Jack.
Well, it's very difficult. And we do have some. And they do take a lot of money. But our biggest problem is, and I've got phenomenal volunteers. I can't do that out without volunteers. And I've got some phenomenal. And people think, well, maybe I'm too old. No, you're not. I got a 94-year-old volunteer out there that does a wonderful job. And then we got a lot of us in the 70s and 60s and stuff like that. But I need mechanics. I got a wonderful mechanic, but he's getting his shoulder operated. But I need my planes, of course, need continually. We've got to work on our MiGs and stuff now to get them ready for the summer flying. But I just need more mechanics. So anybody out there that's a retired mechanic or anything would like to spend a few hours a week out at the airport and at the museum, we'd love to have you. Or any volunteers, because, we certainly need them. But I really got absolutely top of the crop fine people as volunteers. I can't ask for better people. They're wonderful people.
They always say, and I'm not there yet, Jack, but they always say when you're retired, the first few weeks are great, and then you're bored. You want something to do. So, if you're a retired airplane mechanic or, like you said, any volunteer looking for something to do, head on out there, and Jack will find a way to get you to work.
And one thing we've started, too, is we have some young students come over. They get off at Friday afternoon at noon. They come over, and we teach them about the airplanes and everything. Of course, they get to sweep the floors and polish the airplanes and stuff like that. But they also give tours, and we mentor them. So we like to get the young people involved also. If you've got a son or a daughter that would like the airplanes and they'd like to come out and do that, we're more than happy to help them along and teach them about the airplanes and let them give the tours. And we follow them, and we ask the people, how well do these people do? And they said, they're phenomenal young people. And they really enjoy having them. So, you're never too young or you're never too old.
Okay, so we've got about 2 minutes here. Okay. I want to talk about your event. So Friday and Saturday, May 17th and 18th, you have the Armed Forces Celebration. As you mentioned, it's $5 for adults, but if 15 and under, it's absolutely free for the kids to come. And tell us what to expect when we get there.
Well, let me just tell you a couple of airplanes. We've got de Havilland Vampires, which are a rare airplane. In fact, we have two of them here now. And those are, World War II fighter jets. We've got our British Jet Provost, and we got a Czechoslovakian Sokol Galeb G2. What people say, well, what's that? Two in the world, my friend. And we have both of them. And we got, of course, the Korean War L-19. We got our MiGs there, our T-38s, our F-5, and our T-37, which are our Air Force airplanes. And the T-6 will be back this year. We can't give rides this year because they sold the airplane, they changed the new owners, and they've got to get the insurance straightened out. Then we're going to give T-6 rides again. We got our T-37. We got a T-28 probably coming out of Vegas. And then we have our brand new airplanes that I wish they would be here by now, but they're not going to be here. We've got a brand new L-29 and another British Provost, but this is a Mark V. It's the fighter version of them. And so, it's going to be good for people to come out and see these airplanes. You're going to be able to get up and touch them. You know, it's not like standing behind a fence and not be able to, because we're not going to be flying the airplanes this year. We're going to have people to actually go up and touch the airplanes and certainly get on the C-54. You know, and it's a museum in there, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And we have our high school and college teacher, STEM teacher up there, who's going to do a summer program for these people, for young, grade school or high school people and stuff that want to learn aviation in that beautiful airplane. So there's a lot kinds of things to do, and the dance. You know, if you have a chance, get your tickets early. They're cheaper. And you can get them on our website, westernskywarbirds.org. Go to events and just hit donate, and they're there. Or call me, or I'll send you the tickets, or walk through the door. But please come, because it's a phenomenal dance. And anyway, I appreciate the time and everything that you've given me. And we've got the MiG ready for you, bud. You got to get out there.
I'm telling you, and we joked about this, I could get in maybe, but I couldn't get out. And you said, well, there is an eject button.
That's so right. I can always get you out.
We do have a couple of, we have two pairs of tickets to give away, folks, to the hangar dance, which is Saturday night at 6 o'clock out there at the Western Sky. Okay, I'm going to get them in the wrong order. Western Sky Aviation Warbird Museum.
Yes, sir. You got it, bud.
So text me if you want a ticket to the pair of tickets. Want to take your sweetheart to the hangar dance? Text me right now at 435-467-5842. Text me anything. Well, say tickets or hangar, whatever you want to text me. Just let me know you're interested in going to the dance. We got a pair of tickets that we'll have there at the studio for a couple of winners. Jack, thank you so much for spending time with us today and coming on the program. I'm excited for you.
Boy, it's my pleasure, my friend. It really is. And I thank you for being a sponsor for us and being a good friend. And that means a lot to me. And so, to all the people here in St. George, we love you. And I know you all don't like airplanes, but you got to come out there and see them anyway.
All right. Thank you, Jack, so much. Appreciate it. Jack, Count Colonel Jack Hunter.
Right. Thanks, bud.
I want to talk for just a minute about Angelica's Mexican Grill. Angelica's is located right downtown, 101 East St. George Boulevard. They have a phenomenal lineup of incredible food. It's authentic Mexican food, great food, and a great experience at Angelica's Mexican Grill. It's authentic Mexican food. So Angelica grew up in Mexico. She's an American citizen now, but she's got the recipe book for her and her family, and it's all that incredible authentic Mexican food. At Angelica's, things like mulitas, which is kind of like a quesadilla, only with corn tortillas. Of course, they have the quesadillas, the street tacos, the burritos, and quesadilla, which is a slow-roasted beef. So good. They even have, right now, elote. Yeah, that's the Mexican street corn going on right now at Angelica's Mexican Grill. Angelica's is right downtown, 101 East St. George Boulevard. You can check them out online. Angelica's is at 101 East St. George Boulevard. And Angelica's is AG approved.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Good morning, 9:35 on KDXU. I believe we have McCray on the line with us. Are you there, McCray?
I am. What's up, Andy?
Hey, man. I'm up at the state baseball championships up here in Salt Lake. Hi. So I know you're on the phone. I'm on the phone as well. Thankfully, Stockton is there to referee everything here and get it going. Hey, I just finished watching your watching your video on Telegraph Street, basically Washington City area. And before we talk about that, I just, maybe last Thursday or something, I drove through, through Telegraph there through, because I was headed out to Hurricane. I decided to take Telegraph, and I could not believe all the stuff that is already going in there. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Tell us a little bit about,
hopefully keep coming together.
Tell us a little bit about some of the things you've learned and about your video about Washington City and what's happening on Telegraph.
Yeah, the big news is what is the Boot Barn that's going in next to Best Buy. And there was a lot of speculation on that one for a long time on all the different things that people wanted it to be. And I know quite a few people that are happy that it's the Boot Barn. So they should be open sometime in July. And then a couple other things. We've got a Club Pilates going in there by the Rumbies, the nail salon. We've got Rolly's Red Barn opened up a few months back. They moved up. They're right in front of the Walmart. And I know that's a popular one. And then really just
that Red Barn, McRae, was they really did a lot of work. Like I remember when they first bought the gas station, been a couple of years ago, I thought, you know, it's just a gas station and a car wash. How are they going to make that a Rolly's Red Barn like you see in Santaquin, or even like they had in the village there? But they have really done a lot of work. It's pretty cool looking now.
Yep, I agree. And then that just leads down into downtown Washington, which is historically hasn't really been much action down there, but the city really wants to redevelop all that down there, and they've got some pretty cool plans to make it a spot where people want to gather and have it be an actual downtown Main Street kind of vibe for Washington. So
tell us about the old
really early, early on, but there's a lot of potential plans out there.
You had mentioned on your video that it was 100 years ago they had added this old gymnasium onto the back of what is now the museum, and now 100 years later they're going to redo the whole thing, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be a really cool gathering hall for the city for a bunch of different events, and I know the city's really excited about that. And then just everything right around there, as they bring in that new exit, it's going to bring more traffic right there, and hopefully some more good, you know, restaurants and retail and places for people to gather.
They have, for those that don't know, Main Street the underpass there is open. It's not an on-ramp yet for the freeway, but you can go through, kind of go underneath the freeway there. They have, I think during the business hours, they have a light that's like 4 minutes long. So, I mean, chances are if you catch it halfway through, you only have to wait 2 minutes or whatever. But, and then on the weekends, I think they open it up completely. There's no stopping at all. So we do at least have access now.
Yep.
And then we go further out on east on Telegraph. That's kind of the area. I was like, wow, look at all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of apartments down there, a lot of rooftops that have come in on that east side of Telegraph and Washington Parkway, and there will be more and more commercial come in to fill around it, some more restaurants. I know the Dino Dash right there, another car wash going in that people always comment on. But with car washes also come some restaurants and drive-thrus, so hopefully we get some more of those. And that area will just continue to boom as more, you know, more people. There's a couple other developments early on around that area as well that don't have real set plans yet, but that exit 13 area is going to be a really, really popular area as time goes on.
Yeah, we went over there, actually ate at the Seven Brothers, and
it's funny
because a lot of people didn't know where it was, but it's the opposite side of the roundabout from all the other stuff. There's like the Chipotle and Seven Brothers over there. Everything else, the Maverick and the Black Bear and all that, that's on the other side of the roundabout. But it looks like the Seven Brothers, a Hawaii-based restaurant, but it's really not Hawaiian food. It's kind of burger food. Looks like it's taking root there, and it seems like it's going to do well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love Seven Brothers. I'm actually going to Hawaii next week, and we'll be going to the spot on the North Shore, but I'm happy to have it here as well. And they've already done a great job. I've heard a lot of raving reviews, people going out there. So that, and that's just the beginning of a really big retail shopping center out there that I think will be really big hit. So they got in early, and I think it'll pay off for them for sure.
McCray, I know you have some commitments. You have to go. Is there anything else you can tell us on new stuff anywhere else around town that you can maybe break the news on or tell us about?
Not quite, but pretty. I think we're getting pretty close on a couple other big deals. So hopefully we'll have some more news soon.
Awesome. He's McCray Hempler. Thank you, McCray, for your time today. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
Right, see you later. Yep, see you later. Again, I'm up at the state baseball tournament. I'm at my son's house. Thanks again to my son, Bryce, for letting us hang out and letting me use his basement as a makeshift radio studio this morning. I did want to kind of throw a plug in for what I'm doing the rest of today. So these games will be on ESPN Radio, 97.7 FM. We have a game at 11 a.m. That is Crimson Cliffs versus Park City. Crimson was close with Snokane, lost 3-2, but they did lose nevertheless, so they're in the loser's bracket. That's an elimination game, so the Mustangs have got to win to stay in. Again, that's an 11 a.m. broadcast, and it'll be on ESPN Radio. That'll be followed by a Ridgeline Bear River game. We won't have that game on ESPN Radio. It doesn't involve either of any of our local teams. That's at 1:30, and then at 4:30, in the afternoon, Snow Canyon and Timpanogos. Timpanogos went undefeated in their region. Snow Canyon went 11-1 in Region 9. So it should be one heck of a matchup. The Warriors are the 2-seed. Timpanogos, the Timberwolves, are the 3-seed. And then the game late tonight is Dixie and Desert Hills. Yeah, two St. George schools battling here at Salt Lake Community College. That's a 7 o'clock first pitch between the Flyers and the Thunder. And me and Andy Thompson will be there broadcasting those games live. So looking forward to that. And if you want to tune in and give it a listen, we've got four teams left still, four local teams left in the hunt. Washington City's Crimson Cliffs, St. George's Snow Canyon, Dixie, and Desert Hills. All right, we'll take a timeout, and we will finish off the show here, the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU. I'm looking at the clock. Looks like it is 9:43 right now. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:46 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Tomorrow on the show, Sean Christensen will join you from the Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk new businesses in the area, and also be joined by David Romer from the Modern Warriors folks. We'll talk about some, firearms and safety, and there were some troubling crimes over the weekend. I saw a guy got, I don't know if you saw Steve, I think his name is Steve Buscemi, actor.
Yes.
Punched in the nose.
Yeah.
And there was no firearm involved, but he got punched in the nose and was pretty seriously injured, and it was out of the blue. In fact, Stockton, I don't know if you saw the story. I don't know that they have figured out the motive yet of this person that punched the actor in the nose.
No, he just seems like a jerk.
Unfortunately, we have a few of those out in the world. Had an interesting experience last night. So about 9, a little bit after 9, the heavens almost literally opened up here. It was in West Jordan. It started raining. And now I've lived in back east, and I've been to Hawaii, to the rainiest place on earth and stuff. But I got to tell you, it rained as hard last night in West Jordan, Utah, as I've seen it rain any of those other places that are known for their heavy rains. I mean, it just poured, and that's bad for baseball, obviously. But they're on an artificial field, so if it would stop raining, a pretty good drainage system, the game would get going again. The problem is lightning, Yeah. Lightning started striking, and
you don't want to be holding a metal bat when they're, when they're
No, or sitting on a metal bleacher for that matter.
Yeah.
And so they cleared the field, cleared the bleachers, and we had about a 90-minute rain/lightning delay at the ballpark. It was late toward the end of the Desert Hills Bear River game, and Desert Hills did win that game. But it's funny because we were up in. Now, they built a brand-new press box. So last time I did a game at Salt Lake Community College, we were out in the wind and sun. It would have been rain and lightning, too, if they hadn't built this new press box. But they had built a new press box. It's very nice. But, yeah, we're in there, and we're pretty much trapped because there's lightning and rain, and they told us don't go out in it, and the parking lot's, 300 yards away or whatever. So,
yeah.
Andy Thompson and I got to know each other. We got talking about restaurants in St. George, favorite places to eat and things like that, and I guess I'm a simple man because he talked about some of the really fancy places to eat. He's like, but I don't really like that kind of, that very much, the sushi or the big fat $60 steaks or whatever. I don't know how you are, Stockton, but for me, I'd rather have some barbecue or maybe some good Mexican food, before I go to one of those places that charges a lot of money and makes you a fancy steak.
No, I'm basically the same way. I do love me a good steak. Don't get me wrong, but I think there are places in St. George that you can get a steak for a more affordable price, and it's still just as good as like the other places. But no, I would rather go for a burger any day over like a fancy seafood meal that's like over $100 for like a 3-course meal or whatever.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you, and I'll answer this question myself as well, but say your rich uncle, and I don't have a rich uncle, you probably don't either, but say your rich uncle comes to town and says, I've never bought you dinner. I want to take you to wherever, any restaurant in town, no matter the price, I want to take you there and buy you dinner. What would be your maybe top 3 choices, Stockton?
Sakura, Benja's, and probably Cliffside.
Wow, I was honestly Stockton. I was expecting some hemming and hawing. I don't know. I like this.
No, sure.
You had your 3 in a hurry.
Here's the thing. While I said that I'll choose a burger over a fancy dinner any day, I did kind of pick 3 fancy joints. But Sakura, I have a very fond history with. I remember back in the day when Samurai 21 was a thing. It was another hibachi place that kind of preceded Sakura. And then a lot of that staff went over and started Sakura. I love Japanese food. I love it. Teriyaki chicken and rice is just my favorite food of all time. And they do it right. Benja's, on the other hand, they also have a really good teriyaki chicken and rice, and I can't get enough of their pot stickers. I actually haven't gone there since I started my diet because of how dangerous it is for me to be there. Cliffside, the reason why I put Cliffside on there is because I actually haven't been to Cliffside in about over a decade, and the last time I went to Cliffside, I was very picky about my food, and get this, I ordered a steak from there. I want you to guess how I ordered it.
Boy, I don't even know how you like your steak, but I'm going to say medium or medium well.
So as a kid, I wanted it well done, and I didn't want any of the fixings on it, meaning I didn't want it sauteed with onions and mushrooms and gravy. I didn't want any of that. And so I also didn't want the fancy mashed potatoes they had with it because there was too much stuff in it because I was that picky. Now, I've heard that the best burger you can get in town is at Cliffside, arguably. So I want to go there again and actually give it a good, honest try since I've opened my palate, as it were. You can thank a manager of a Jimmy John's down the street for forcing me to eat a sandwich with everything on it to make me appreciate food for what it is.
All right.
But what about you? What about you?
Well, so I decided I needed to kind of make categories when asked this question because I said before, and I'll say it again, I'm kind of a simple man. I like guy food, food.
Manly food.
So, barbecue is going to be my first choice. I like Dubs barbecue. I like Big Lud. My only problem with the Big Lud and his trailer is, if you're looking for atmosphere, it's a trailer. You're going to eat. You're either going to take it home and eat it, or you're going to eat in your car, or you're going to sit on a picnic.
Yeah, you're going to eat on a picnic table. And let the flies
for
join
me,
you.
as good as Big Lud's is, I just, you know, I love Big Lud's. I really do. And their food is great. But, you know, I if you want to sit down and be catered to a little bit, have a waiter help you, that's not where you're going to end up. I, of course, love Angelica's Mexican food. Stupid thing that though about me, that I found this dish and I don't think they're doing that. I hope they survive. I hope they're doing okay. But there's a place called Jaybird's right by the mall.
Yes.
Jaybird's
hot Nashville chicken or whatever it's called.
Yeah. So you can go in and order and some of the people that listen to the show are going to go, "Ew, come on, man, really?" But you can order the Mac Daddy. Now the Mac Daddy is a big giant hunk of chicken. I'm thinking a whole, I don't know if it's a pound or, but a big old thing of chicken. And you can order it as hot and as spicy as you want it. All right. And then
Didn't you say
put that on a bun.
Hold on. Aren't you not a spicy guy?
No, I do like spicy.
Oh, you do like spicy.
Yeah.
Why did I think you weren't a spicy guy? I guess I don't know you
as well. I did have that experience at Houston Hot Chicken.
But I
am a spicy guy, but there was so spicy that I couldn't finish it. Anyway, back to Jaybird.
Yes, yeah, sorry.
So they put the chicken on a bun, and then they put a big old ladle full of macaroni and cheese on top of the chicken.
Holy.
They put a bun on the top.
Hence the
name.
And
they call it the Mac Daddy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And it's funny because my dad doesn't like it there. My wife doesn't like it there, but that – honestly, if I had to pick one sandwich in St. George right now, it would be the Mac Daddy at Jaybird's.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, a one-pound chicken filet, like, that's insane.
Yeah, well, it's breaded and fried, which makes it really bad for you, too.
Oh, yeah, but of course. I didn't think I was going in there for a – I don't think – listen, even if you're on, like, the most – the most strict of diets, you know, or protein heavy diets, I don't think a pound of chicken in general is good for you.
Yeah, unless you're looking for a lot of protein, because
That's true. It does have a lot
of protein. The sweet pork at Angelica's, when I do AG approved on Angelica's, I'm not blowing smoke. I love their sweet pork.
Their sweet pork and their the sweet pork. What is your exact order you get there? Like everything.
I go back and forth between the mulita, which is and the quesadilla. And the mulita is basically a quesadilla only with corn tortillas instead of flour tortillas.
Gotcha.
But I found a little secret, and it costs us a dollar or two more. But if you go to Angelica's, you can get the sweet pork, and then you can say, "Hey, I would like actually two meats," and they would, and then you can get the spicy. I think they call it the carne asada, super spicy pork to go with it, and the combination of sweet and spicy is, it's a winning combination over there at Angelica's, and it's good stuff. Do you want Tex-Mex? To me, Tex-Mex is Paula's. I love Paula's. I've been going to Paula's for 40 years, so for Tex-Mex. That's where I'm going to end up. And then if I want a steak, I still love Anasazi. I love the concept of they bring it to you just lightly seared, and then you cut off pieces, and then on that hot rock, you finish cooking it yourself, and then you dip it in one of their amazing sauces. And
here's the issue there. You just said that steaks, you don't like to get the crazy expensive steaks. Isn't Anasazi arguably the most expensive place to get a steak in town?
I don't think it is. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, though. I think I've been there maybe four or five times, and at least two of them, maybe three of them, were already paid for by the company. They were company meals, so it didn't cost me anything.
Well, there you go. The last time I went there, I'm pretty sure my dad turned a different shade of white when he saw the bill. And granted, the whole family was there, so it was... And I mean, I can only imagine how white he would turn after he retires and he had to pay for something like that.
Yeah, if you're feeding a tribe, don't go to Anasazi.
Don't go to Anasazi. Go to Golden Corral or Chuck a Ram or whatever and just shove it down the kid's gullet and you'll be fine.
There you go. I did want to remind folks, the Hangar Dance out there at the Western Sky Aviation Warbird Museum is this Saturday, 6 o'clock. Go out there. It's 40-style swing dance type thing. They have refreshments. They have performances from a couple of different dancing groups, including some Polynesian dance. And I have actually have a set of tickets left for anybody that wants to go. You need to text me at – it's 435 area code. You need to text me at 467-5842. That's 467 5842. I've got one set left. Somebody's already claimed one set. I had two sets, so I've got one set left. If you want to text in to me, I'll get those names over to Stockton, and he'll have them all ready for you there at the studio after the program is over.
You might want to tell people again that the schedule for the baseball tournament today, just so that they know where to find you.
Yeah, good call. 11 o'clock this morning, and probably a few minutes before, like maybe 10 minutes, 11, will be on the air with Crimson Cliffs and Park City. That's an elimination game. And again, that'll be on ESPN Radio 97.7 FM. We do not have a team in the 1:30 game. That's Ridgeline at Bear River. So we will not broadcast that to Southern Utah. But then the two winners bracket games, Snow Canyon and Timpanogos, the Region 9 champ and the Region 8 champ, will go at it. That's, again, at 4:30. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, the big one, Dixie and Desert Hills, two Region 9 rivals. They split their regular season matchups. They play each other. And, again, that game will be on ESPN Radio tonight.
I feel like I'm in high school again.
Now, tomorrow, of course, with depending on who wins and where they end up, we'll have probably three or four more games tomorrow as well as we whittle our way down and head toward a state championship.